Hey, engine professionals, machinists, and enthusiasts, welcome to the Engine Professional Podcast.
Well, Chuck, we're back at it for another month, another Engine Professional Podcast. And I noticed lately on the tech line, I don't know about you, but I think shops have picked up a bunch. Tech line's gotten pretty busy lately, and definitely a lot of international calls I've noticed lately too, as well as diesel stuff. Majority of our calls here lately have been all diesel related. So what are you seeing on your end?
Yeah, same. I think for folks that know that we do have a Spanish-speaking technician, Francisco, probably have read some of his articles, seen him online and so forth. He's given us a shot in the arm there, you know, so that allows people to communicate better with us. So that's been quite positive. We've seen some change in like diesel repair shops or actually getting into doing some cylinder head and machining and so forth. So that's impacted how we answer questions. I think we were just talking yesterday about fuel injection information. You know, folks are wanting to know about fuel pumps and can they get information regarding that as well? So, yeah, if you're sitting still, you're going backwards, right? So
exactly. And you know, it was funny. I even took a call yesterday, and this is a shop that typically does a lot of motorcycle and power sport stuff. I mean, they replate little motorcycle cylinders, and they were actually quizzing me on deck heights for a Komatsu 11-liter engine. So, I mean, it just goes to show you just sort of some of the diversity and just some of the direction that these shops are going. They're tooling up for some more of the industrial stuff. And we're going to talk to our guest, Jeff Baldwin, today a little bit too about that, because I know Jeff, who is a serious race shop, has also tooled up and gone to be able to tool up and do the industrial stuff as well. So
yeah,
it's quite the move.
Yeah, and I actually had a call from an equipment supplier the other night of a race shop in Ohio, and he said, you know, hey, I'm going to get you guys connected, because he's saying since he's added some more modern equipment that he's realized that, hey, I can take on what I want, because the diesel and the high performance stuff is pretty close, right? You have to measure, you know, piston protrusion. So I think it's a more seamless transition. You know, some of the old stuff that wasn't so critical that you hit some of these dimensions, they were low compression engines and so forth. That's changed. But if you're building a race engine, you're really in tune to piston height, compression ratio, and so forth. And that's super critical with diesel engines, because they are already such high compression ratios. So there's not a lot of room for, not keeping on top of those things.
No, that's true. And like I say, I mean, obviously Process Pro has all the specifications for doing a lot of the diesel engines in there. But for those that are listening, I mean, if you're looking for some of the oddball stuff, like Chuck mentioned, you know, injection pump timing or flow rates for fuel injectors, you know, that kind of stuff, that's the kind of information you probably won't see in Process, but we can get that for you. So just to keep you, let you know that that's available for you. So,
right.
Yep. So Chuck, you and I, we saw each other here not that long ago. We were out at Apex SEMA out in Las Vegas. And you know what? The show this year, I thought, just, you know, we talked about this before. It was definitely quality over quantity. Maybe the hallways and, you know, maybe some of the crowd wasn't quite as much as normal. But I think, you know, for us, we got a lot of business to business sort of stuff done. We got a lot of our relationships and people came to the booth that we normally talk to. All in all, it was a great show.
Agreed. Yeah. You said it great. Business to business was good. SEMA is still a spectacle. You go out to the parking lot and the drifting and stuff like that. There's a lot of people that come for those things. You know, of course, we're in the central hall, and which is more low, you know, where the engine parts people and, you know, some sheet metal fabrication, things of that nature. Of course, it's a mix, but yeah, it was good. There was a little less traffic. Fewer tire kickers coming by that you probably, just being honest here, you know, the tire kickers, you know, they may make, yep, they go quick because you're busy, but you know, it's not going to be productive. So like you said, we had quality over quantity, and that's great.
No, exactly. And you know what, we just finished that one, and then rolling right into December here pretty quick, we got the PRI show coming up, and that's a big show for us. I mean, we, a lot of things on the go at PRI. We've got the EPIC conference. That's the day before PRI. We have the PRI show itself. We've got our VIP party on Friday night. We are involved with the student breakfast, which is Friday morning. Of course, Jeff Baldwin, who's our guest today, he built our ERAF engine. And, you know, that's we're going to have tickets for that. So I'm looking forward to PRI. How about you?
Oh, 100%. You know, I live in Indiana, and I've always enjoyed the PRI show. And if I weren't in this position where it work required me to be there, I would be there anyway. I used to take vacation time to go at a previous place of employment because it's fun. I mean, it's a reunion, and it's in wintertime, so everybody's going to stick to it. You know, Indianapolis, December, you're staying at the show.
Where else are you going to be? That's a better to do. So you might as well be with your friends and seeing some cool stuff on the show floor. And, you know, speaking of Epic, so that is our technical conference that we're doing the day before PRI. And if you haven't got your tickets yet, make sure to get registered for that one. We do need a head count sort of beforehand so that we can plan for food and that kind of stuff. But, I mean, you've got breakfast, you got lunch, we've got four technical presentations, and we got some, you know, high-level presenters. I know you were heavily involved with lining, you know, getting a lot of these presenters lined up. We've got Kevin Feeney and Shannon Struther from P1. Randy Neal, Ben Strader, Billy Godbold. We got Lakespeed Jr. doing one. We got Dan Bagley from King Bearing. So, I mean, this is shaping up to be a top-notch event.
Yeah, they're going to be a little adjustment on that one. So Billy's not going to be there, but Nick Norris from Cali's Crankshaft is going to step in because Billy's son is graduating college, and, you know, his thing, he's a combustion analysis guy. So, you know, Billy, I understand that. I got to go there and support your son that's following in your footsteps.
You can't miss those days, though. I mean, those only come once. So, you know what? I totally understand. I mean, you got to take those events and those times when you can get them, for sure.
It's still a bang-up lineup. It truly is.
Agreed. And same thing for the REF engine. If you haven't got your tickets for that one yet, we're going to be drawing that on the Saturday. We do that just after lunch. And someone's going to win a pretty cool engine. I mean, Jeff will explain a little bit more about it. But, I mean, this engine, and it's actually right in behind Jeff. So, Jeff can tell a little bit more about it. But Jeff Baldwin is our guest today. Jeff is our chairman of AERA and heavily involved with the board of directors. And Jeff's been on for several years. And, again, he's helped us with the EREF engine. I've actually had a chance, and I know you have too, Chuck, to go out and actually see Jeff's shop. And man, this is a first-class facility. I always get shop envy every time I'm out there. So, Jeff, how's it going today?
It's going very good. How about you guys?
Yeah, very, very good. So, Jeff, tell us a little bit more, a little bit more about yourself, some of your background. How did you get involved with what you're doing, and how did you get involved with AERA?
Well, back, I went to Nashville or Diesel back in 1995 and graduated from there, went straight into an automotive machine shop. It was a kind of an old school shop, old equipment, but I liked the work. I kind of seen the writing on the wall for the shop. It didn't look like it was going to sustain very long, so I ended up leaving and going to a auto dealership and mechanic to detailed and done all that type work. And we raced while we were with them as well. So I guess in 2000, I ended up buying out that machine shop that I went to school with or after I went to work with after school. So bought everything but their crank grinder, I guess, and maybe the rod reconditioning. The owner wanted to keep that. But it was all old 1950s equipment, all Van Norman. Decent stuff to get me started. So I built a shop here in 2000, end of 2001, end of 2002. So we've been here 23 years now at our facility. So, and we've added on through the years, but just started updating equipment and realized that the equipment that I had wasn't probably up to snuff to be doing the race engine that we were wanting to produce. So gradually started buying new stuff and got into the Rottler equipment and the CNC equipment later, you know, within the last 8-10 years here. But that was a big game changer for us for sure.
Yeah. And like I say, I mean, if you ever get a chance to get out to your area, stop in and see Jeff. I mean, the shop is first class. And Jeff, tell us a little bit about some of your, some of your engine stuff has been on Pinks, in years past, but tell us a little bit about, what do you focus on? What sort of, do you have a particular race platform that you like to specialize in, or do you kind of just do anything that goes fast?
We do anything, but our niche market is demolition derby. We do a lot of that stuff, send those all over the country, out of the country. That's been a big, big market for us. It has slowed a little bit. There's a few more people in the game now. And we kind of, in 2017, 18, we really started focusing on the LS dirt late model engine. So we kind of veered to the circle track side for 3 or 4 or 5 years there. But we do a broad range of everything from drag race, truck pull, circle track, and everyday repair work too, for a lot of the machine shop or a lot of the automotive repair shops around the area use us to repair cylinder heads. And we put a piston in a Escalade last week, just different stuff that people need, for getting them back on the road.
Sure. Yeah.
So, question, you were talking about the age of some of the equipment that you were working with. We know that people can get to the end result with the equipment, older machines and so forth.
Right.
But could you kind of elaborate on why you would buy more modern equipment? What things it does above and beyond, precision? Because again, you hear that a lot. Well, you can get there with the CK-10 or you can, a power stroke hone or something of that nature.
But yeah. I go back to remembering we had a rotary 570 rotary brooch, and the setup, which you've set up, but probably everybody set 1,000 times, but decking a block on one of those, especially in the race world where we're trying to get everything, paralleled and perfect. I mean, you basically, or at least how we done it anyway, we mocked up 4 pistons in each corner, took a measurement on what we needed off, and then had to set it up accordingly. So, I mean, there were so many blocks that were twisted and the way those set up, that was such a slow procedure compared to now. We mock up off the main, we put in the cam tunnel, the roller rotates when we hit the button and send it to wherever we want it to. So it's just the speed and accuracy of the new CNC is just second to none. I mean, it's just so much faster. So, and the surface finishes are unbelievably better, of course. And, same thing on the cylinder hone. Spent hours and days and just, years standing in front of the CK-10, and it always done a great job. We still have engines that are out there that we've built with that, and no problems. But man, nowadays Dylan, Dylan's setting up the Rottler and, hits the button and it does what it does. I mean, it's easy enough. My daughter can run it, so as long as you understand math and where you're headed, you can get there. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Chuck, efficiency is king.
Absolutely.
Especially once, as you said, you're not just working on one race engine or something like that. You're working on a bit of everything. So you have to make a lot of changeovers. Changeovers take time. So then you have to improve your ability to change over quickly. So as you said, precision is, an absolute. But you can do that if you just take the time with other methods. But this gives you the ability to be precise, efficient, quick.
And you could tell on the tech line too, these are the kind of calls that we're getting. More and more folks have the CNC equipment. So the calls we're getting are related to, do you have bore spacing? Do you have a blueprint for this particular block?
Right.
Those are the kind of calls. So we can tell, folks are now actually going that step further with the setup and actually trying to do it to actually blueprint spec. So that's pretty cool.
And even on our higher end dirt track stuff, we're used to, the cam tunnel lifter bore was what it was. We didn't have any equipment to address that stuff, where nowadays that's one of our key points, where we make sure the cam tunnel is straight in line with the mains, and lifter bores are in the correct location, and correct sizing and geometry. And I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's, it might be 5 or 10, 15 horsepower at the end of the day. So that's what we're after.
Jeff, you mentioned the Derby stuff. I know I'm not going to make you tell any secrets or anything, but is there, you know, what's kind of some of the stuff that you got to be careful on, or what, you know, on the engine build itself for some of the Derby stuff, where do you kind of put some of your extra, you know, labor and that kind of, you know, thing?
Biggest, we got some engines out of Bill Davis Racing back when they closed the doors back early 2000s or whenever that was. So at an auction for dirt cheap. And we pulled those apart and seen all the piston squirters. And at that time they had cam squirters in them because of the flat tappet and all that. But when I seen that, I was like, oh yeah, we can use this on the Derby stuff. Cause we weren't sending them out through the country back then. We were doing mostly local, but again, we knew at that point, if we could make it last another 5 or 10 minutes, that's the difference between 10th and first, you know? So it's, we want to cash checks is what we want to do. So anyway, piston squirters are huge in our opinion. I mean, almost every modern engine has them in there now. So piston squirters are big, obviously clearance. That engine has to run with no water sometimes for 30, 40, 50 minutes, sometimes longer with no water. So we have to control what we can, and we use the oil. If we run out of oil, we know we're done anyway. So we use the oil to cool it at that point. So, but we have to leave expansion room for the piston to grow that much. And I mean, we've laser temped engines coming off the track and we're 600, 650 degree.
Wow.
So it gets insanely hot. We do a lot of hard anodized pistons in the higher end engines. Obviously MLS head gaskets, head studs, and then just working the fueling side and the ignition side, just keeping everything running correctly. That's we dyno everything that we do, so when we send them out of the door, we know we have them where they need to be. But as racers go, they sometimes get in there and monkey with stuff, and then they end up calling with problems and everything else. But we just got to work with them through that and get that, we can get them fixed back up usually. But
sure,
that's
Is that what you prefer? You try to prefer more of a turnkey kind of setup just so that you can control some of those variables? Is that what you aim for?
It really is market. It depends on what the market is. The Derby guys rarely buy a short block. We sell complete engines to those guys for the most part. Circle track guys tend to buy, I would say, probably 75% long blocks. Some of them have a complete. We always complete the engine. If we're not selling them ignition, a carburetor, I have them send them to me. That way we can dyno with what they're physically using, of course. But they will buy short blocks and put them together themselves. And some of the Derby guys will too. Truck pull guys typically are turnkey engines. Drag race guys, I would say old school guys will do some assembly work. Most of the newer generation, they want something turnkey. I mean, you have some guys assembling, but it definitely a lot more long block and turnkey stuff than short blocks. And what we've been getting here over this week, we've had three different shops call in, one from below Talladega, Alabama, one from Memphis, and one from Kentucky. All engine builders, all with engine shops that they're older guys. They do not have CNC equipment, and they're busy enough. They don't want to mess with the block work anymore. So the guy from Talladega does a lot of asphalt stuff. He's talking about sending 25 to 30 blocks up a year to just have the deck work, bore work, cam tunnel, lifter bores, you know, all the block prep work done for him. And that way he can just focus on the assembly and cylinder head side of it. So we're getting a lot more of that as well. So,
yep. Tell us a little bit about your, that Pink story. You know, how did you get involved with those guys and how did that kind of come together?
So that's, 2006 is when that happened. We were in season two or three, I think season three. So it had really ramped up. It was big by that point. One of our classmates, basically went to school with him, Van Burgess. He got a hold of Pink's and basically got her name in the hat. But at that point, the roster was full. So they only, that we filmed in St. Louis, they took, I think they filmed maybe four episodes. Well, there were two on Friday night, two on Saturday night, if I remember right how it went. But we were basically just on standby. So we had no car, we had no parts, we had nothing. We got a call with literally 2 weeks to go before a film date. And they said, hey, one of the teams backed out, you're next. Or can you produce a car? So we literally stopped everything we were doing and drug a Monte Carlo. We built an 84, 85 Monte Carlo. Drug it. It was at one of our derby guys' shops. He was going to derby it. So it was beat up. It was pretty rough. It had a V6 in it. So we drug that car out of his field about 5 miles from us here and brought it to the shop. And we just started making phone calls. And at this point, like I said, Pink's was huge. So we got parts donated from everybody. Nitrous Express done a Nitrous kit. Jeff Mall, Race Parts Direct. He provided a lot of the engine parts. We were just going to build. I had enough parts to build a decent little 350, but we ended up with a 421, big heads, big everything. It ended up being a good piece. So we had a transmission shop do the transmission. We had a rear end shop donate a rear end for us. Caltrax, I think, done a full rear suspension setup for us. I mean, it literally just you pick up a phone call and whatever you could get. They would donate it. It was big at that point. So within 2 weeks, we stripped that car, had a cage put in it, painted it, gutted it, full race interior, rear suspension, front suspension, all the shocks and springs. And I built that 421 here. And they took it and tested it. I think we filmed on, I want to say our film date was on Saturday, if I remember right. So we took that and tested it on Friday night in Paducah and launched it with nitrous. And it literally raised up and reared up so bad on the left front, it kicked the left rear spring out of the car on the track. So we brought it back. We put an anti-roll bar set up in the back of it. And it looked like $1 million. It just so happens we had the body shop that painted it, we had a big hailstorm. Like a month prior. So there were all these hail teams in town. So they came up and helped the body shop. We'd literally done all the body work here, except for the paint. But they done all these people came in and our shop looked like an ant farm. There were people. It was destroyed for one because we were thrashing every minute of the day to get this car done. But literally 2 weeks is what we had to finish it. So we were, we filmed that, I think it was on that Saturday evening then, and ended up winning. That was the best out of five at that point. So we won three rounds, first, second, third race. We never got beat. So we had a little bit more of a car than what the other team did. So, but it was legit. We brought their car home.
Wow.
So, and then we ended up building Jeff Mall. That's helped us out a little bit on the big block behind us and on the first year we done, two years ago, I guess, with Race Parts Direct. He ended up being in it twice. He filmed in Texas and he filmed in Kansas City. We won both those races too. So,
yeah, no, that's pretty cool. Just that build itself could have been a reality TV show.
Oh, I mean, I'm, you know,
those 2 weeks.
It was, you talk about dragging. We didn't get back home until probably 4 a.m. that night. We all had to work the next day. And, oh my gosh, we were still amped up, but we were zapped too. I mean, it was 2 weeks of chaos. So, but it was cool. It was a good time.
Just one of those chalk it up for experience, but not something you want to do once a year.
Yeah. Correct. then we got the film date when they were going to air it. And we had a huge party here at the shop. We had, we probably had 350, 400 people here. We had one of the local barbecue pits bring in a big smoker and done up all the cooking, and Stereo One place brought in a gigantic projector and sound system, and had a huge party, had a car show out front. It was a heck of a good time.
Wow. No, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yep. So if you had to pick of all the race platforms, do you have a favorite? Do you have one, you know, that you're kind of more passionate towards?
I like dirt track, probably the best out of all of it. I've been involved in dirt track racing since 92, I guess. Had a couple little brief stops here and there, but we drag raced for a little bit ourselves, and then the Derby stuff kind of took over there from like 2010 to 2017 or 18. I went to every, not every show, but at that point we were going to Topeka twice a year. We were going to down in Kentucky several times, and Ohio. There were big derbies all over the country, and at that point we couldn't build enough engines. I mean, there were three or four of us in the shop at that point. It was literally every day. I mean, we were still doing other platforms, but it was all hands on deck. There wouldn't be anything to see 25 or 30 derby engines with cradles in the shop at once.
Right. And kind of like Chuck and I were talking about, you know, sort of at the start of the podcast, I mean, we've seen this big transition with a lot of the folks, you know, a lot of our custom shops moving over to some industrial work. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit. I know when I toured the shop, you've actually made a significant investment, you know, for some of this big stuff. But tell us kind of what drove you to go that route.
Well, local here, we've got a few machine shops. Only one of them handles big equipment, and they do a great job with it too. We kept getting the phone call that we need to get some work done. Can you do it? And it was just once in a while, but then it became more and more and more all the time. So finally, you know, with the cost of racing and how all that's going, I'm just, you know, I was starting to get a little concerned. I was like, man, I don't see how these people can continue to keep going. It's just gotten so expensive. The parts are high. It's just, you know, it is what it is. There's still a ton of it going on, so it's not going anywhere. But I was just looking out for our business. I was like, you know what? I think there's enough interest, especially in our area. We've got some of the equipment. Obviously, we're going to have to make an investment in injector tooling and hot tanks and cranes and bigger forklift and, you know, everything it takes to do what we do. But I thought it was time to make that change, and or at least that addition to the shop. And we really haven't advertised a whole lot for it, but we've got a couple shops that we do a lot of work for, a lot of Detroit 60, C15s, ISX a little bit. But it's been good for us. It's like I said, it's definitely been a learning curve, and without ARA and, you know, all the help from the team there, and just being able to work with the group there, I probably wouldn't have honestly taken it on without ARA. I just, without having the specs and the measurements and everything it takes to do what we do, it's impossible. You have to have the data to do what you need to do. So that made the jump a little bit easier for sure.
Yeah, you have to have the willing connections to like the,
yes,
you know, we're all competitive in nature, and you take a look at racing, for instance. Okay. But not everybody can handle it all. So you have conversations with other AERA members. That's probably one of the biggest things that people can relate to, is like, oh, I know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy, and we kind of daisy chain all of that stuff together. And okay, well, what can you get by? It's what allows people to get into something without having all of that year's experience, because somebody yes. else is probably willing to help you, even though it's a competitive area. We're all wanting that work, but we're pretty good about sharing the information. So yeah,
that's one cool thing with Rottler, with all these machines having the same platform. If one of the members needs a program that we already have written, we have it happen all the time. You know, people call and say, hey, do you have a stroker notch program for a big block Chevy, or do you have something wrote for a cam tunnel on a small block or an LS or something? And I mean, it's literally just pull the screen up and share it, and it's done, you know. So that's a big help. It speeds the process up a bunch, and we help out a lot of people, and I've done the same thing, you know. So
Jeff, you mentioned 8 year A. So you know, for the folks that don't know out there, so AERA has a, they have a board of directors, and it, those board of directors are the ones that kind of help us on staff. They guide us because those are your, I mean, you're the eyes and ears in the industry and in the field to help us sort of figure out for future year planning and that kind of stuff. How did you get involved with AERA and especially from the board side?
Yeah. So I kind of sent them, I can't remember exactly when we became members. I think we've probably been 8-10 years now, probably somewhere in that area. But we were at PRI 1 year, and Steve Fox and my wife hit it off pretty good, and got us involved, and just becoming a member. And at that point, I had no idea exactly what we would gain from it. But after using it for a year, you know, it's obviously, I don't see how we worked without it, you know. So just the networking from shop to shop, and just the data that you get is, you know, it's a very small cost for what you get out of it, for sure. But then I was asked to join the board. We've been on now for, I guess, what, five years or something like that. But it's been amazing. It's you not only get to network even closer with the people that are on the board, which helps out even more, but just seeing how it all works, seeing the behind the scenes on how in depth you guys go to get all the info, and it's countless hours spent. My wife has helped, you know, add data and stuff as well. So there's a lot to it. People, I don't think people even understand how much goes into it on the backside. But it's such a good program, and good place to be a part of. It's good. And then like I said, on being on the board, you can help steer the ship a little bit on, you know, trying to help give back to, you know, Dave Steiney, the previous chairman. He was big on how are we going to help the members, you know, and I am too. I'm, you know, we're a small shop, so, you know, everything that we can gain from it is just that much better. It just makes it that much more valuable. So it's been a very, very good membership and everything to be a part of.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for those folks listening, so AERA is a nonprofit, and you know, when Jeff talks about the board of directors, essentially, you know, and we get this question every now and then, it's like, well, who owns AERA? Or, you know, like, well, actually the members, you know, if you want to say, I mean, the members are the ones that actually, if you want to say, own AERA or are involved, and the board of directors are actually just an extension of membership. So not only are they representing you, the members, you know, again, they're helping us on staff, direct us and guide us, and they let us know as to, look, guys, you know, we really need to be looking more towards going this route. And, you know, we need more industrial information, or we need help with this or help with that. So it's for anybody listening, you know, if you are an AERA member and you've ever, you know, if you want to throw your hat in the ring at some point, you know, and want to be a director, by all means, just shoot us an email. It's you know, it goes through a process. It's not, you know, there is a selection committee that picks, you know, folks to be on the board. But what I know, I was chairman back in 2007. It's a great experience. I would recommend it for you know, again, Jeff, I can share with you, it's a big deal for sure.
Yeah, it is definitely a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's commitments, you know, time's a valuable, I'm going to say commodity, but it's a pretty thin commodity, right? Because we don't have a lot of time. So that is one thing that you have to consider if you were, you know, well, you have board meetings, there's expectations to be able to try to make these meetings and so forth. So, it is a sacrifice. You have to give up some stuff, but in all, in the end, it's a great return on investment too.
I would agree 100%.
Yeah. And sacrifice. I mean, look at what you've done with our, you know, the EREF engine. So the engine, Rebuilders Education Foundation, is a program that we have at AERA that gives grants and scholarships to those that want to train in engine machining and building. And what we do to gather funds for that is we have an engine built, and then we do tickets, and we do a drawing every year at PRI. So the last several years, Jeff, you've been involved. You know, we've done some pretty cool engines. We've had some pretty high horsepower numbers, but tell us a little bit about what's behind you there. What have we got this year for an engine that we're giving away?
So this year we had such a cool build last year. The first one of those, the first year was a 565 supercharged. The second year we done a 582 twin carbureted tunnel ram setup, and it turned out phenomenal. It was really pretty. That color you guys picked was amazing. So this year we're like, you know, how are we going to top that? You know, that's kind of the inner joke, is how are we going to outdo what we done last year? So, which is, that's just racers. We want to keep outdoing what we've done last. So we've done a 598 this year. Dart supplied the block and cylinder heads and intake manifold. And we call around and we get help from as many manufacturers as we can to produce what we want to build. But Vortex supercharger done another supercharger for us. Comp Cam's done some valve train help, and Scorpion done rocker arms, and Barroso supplies valve covers, the front cover, the pan, Melling oil pump. It's just Holly done a lot on the fuel injection ignition side of it this year. Elgin push rods, Cloy's on timing chain. There's just so many of our key partners that we work with anyway. It's a way for them to advertise a little bit too and get something out of it. Jones does an amazing job on the pulley system. That's what we ended up with this year, is a 598, making around 1,200 horsepower with it, just hair over, and a little over 1,000 foot-pounds of torque. So it's a monster. Pump gas setup. So,
no, that's cool. And it, I did see the video on the dyno, and whoever wins this engine, I mean, this is going to be, this will be a handful. I mean, this one's going to make some power.
Yeah. A thousand foot pounds will wake anything up.
Exactly.
Yeah. That'd make a pretty sweet C10 or something, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So Jeff, you're going to haul that to PRI. We'll see that. It'll be in the 8-year-A booth, and it'll be there. And I know we're going to be selling tickets for that one. They're $20 for 5 tickets. Tickets are for sale now, and you can go to our website. Right, even when you go to 8yeara.org, there's a big big banner on the front where you can click and go right to the engine and actually purchase tickets. So it's we've had. The last couple of years, we've actually had some really cool winners. I remember that first one, Jeff. Remember we had that family.
Yes.
You know, they were actually standing there. You know, they couldn't, or yeah. No, I can't quite remember, but I don't know if they were standing there or Steve called, but they couldn't believe it was, they were the winner. Like,
yeah,
that's right. The guy came up afterwards. He's like, oh, who won the engine?
Yes,
and right. Steve says, well, I think you did, you know, or something. It was,
it was in his wife's state.
That's right. Yeah. And he was just absolutely flabbergasted that he had won the engine.
They were shocked for sure.
Yeah.
Then last year he was like, I think he was in disbelief as well. He was there, but he was down the aisle ways, and he finally made his way over there, and he's like, are you serious? I won this thing?
Yeah.
So.
No, that's pretty cool.
It is cool. It's a neat project for us to be a part of. We do all the block work, balancing work. The last few years, the cylinder heads have been complete, so we haven't had to do a whole lot to the cylinder head side of things. But we still, obviously, spring rates and check valve job and go through everything. But it's just a super neat thing to be a part of, and it's for a great, you know, great cause as well. So,
yeah, well, we sure appreciate it.
Just to understand that cause, you know, every industry struggles. You know, in the trades, right? And what we're trying to do is draw attention to the industry, but also give back in respect to training and education. So the Engine Rebuilders Education Foundation, you know, we give scholarships, but we're very benevolent with helping members, you know, with cost of attending even these tech and skills regionals and things of that nature. So it's all going for a good cause. So that $20 that you may throw out there for some tickets, you know, whether you win or not, it's pretty easy to say, hey, good cause, whether I get anything, you know, whether I win the engine or not, I'm doing good for my community, the overall industry community, you know. So there's a lot of other things that we throw our money away on, like $7 cups of coffee and so forth. You know, makes that $20 to help our future seem a lot less of a sting to a wallet, right?
Yeah. And Chuck, like you mentioned, I mean, those grants and scholarships, for those that are listening, I mean, if you're an AERA member and you maybe got somebody in the shop that you want to have a little extra training, I mean, something like even a, something like a welding class or a tuning class or something like that, those monies are available for you to be able to take advantage of that. So we do have a bunch of information on our website. It's under the EREF tab. And you can go on there and there's forms to fill out for applying for those grants and scholarships. But Jeff, we can't thank you enough. I know we got you signed up for the next 22 years, I think, is your contract for building those engines. So, I mean, you're in it for the long haul. So we appreciate it for sure.
Well, that's good. I'm glad I can be a part of it for 22 years.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're still kicking in 22 years.
Right?
Yeah, we got to make sure there's nothing but gray beard by the time you're done.
Yeah. I think these diesels are making it more and more gray every year.
How's your fingernails? You getting dirtier with putting on all this diesel stuff? Or
no, I leave that up to Dylan.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, no, it actually has not been too bad. It's everything is just big. It's bigger. It's heavier. I think our biggest thing is just learning how to move it, how to hook it, how to turn it. You know, that's been the. We're so used to grabbing a LS head and doing what we need to do. Where now we're Detroit 60 C15. You're not grabbing that, and moving it. You know, so we have to figure out how to handle it, and that's been a big part of it. And just the injector cup work. You know, that's been all the different tooling. And, you know, every time we get another head in, it's like I was telling you earlier. Yesterday was a $5,000 investment on a injection cup tool for a Detroit 60, you know, so that's why we didn't jump in like head first, right from the get go. Cause we were able to span everything out. So it didn't just cost us $1 billion right up front. So it's honestly worked out pretty good. We're, you know, kind of just stepping into it lightly. And, you know, but like I said, it's been really good. We enjoy the work. It's just something different. You know, I enjoy the challenge of the, I do most of the block work, so I enjoy the machining side of it. Again, with the roller, you can manipulate and kind of do what you need to do to get pretty much any of it done. So it's, you know, obviously we had to have different servicer, different hot tanks, different lifting capabilities to do that. But it's been good.
No, and it, like you say, it, when you're used to throwing an LS head around and all of a sudden, you know, a C15 falls over on the bench and catches your shop coat or something, you know. Like
it's a big deal. Absolutely. It's a big deal.
Right. Well, Jeff, we're looking forward to seeing you at PRI. You know, we always enjoyed that time. And like Chuck and I were talking about before, it's for us, I mean, those are busy days, but it's like one big family reunion. You know, when you get there, you see all the members that you've talked to all year long. Everybody's in a really great mood, great spirits, and we really do enjoy that show, and we're looking forward to seeing you there.
Yep, looking forward to seeing you guys too. It's a great time. Like I said, for people that don't go, I think there's a huge, they're missing out on a huge thing. Like I said, it's worth the time spent there. I didn't start going till probably 2014. It was still in Orlando. I went twice in Orlando, were the first, and that's when it split. So those are the first 2 years I went. But just even buying the equipment, I was buying used equipment at that point and paying way, way too much for it, and not, you know, not getting as new a stuff as what I should have been buying at the time. So I kind of went down a path there where I should have been invested in new versus rebuying old over and over and over. But I learned my lesson, you know. So. It's a good show.
Yeah. I think I would add to that, because I get this question on the tech line, and you have folks who are not in racing and they think that it's not the right show for them. And right. This is the show for engine builders, engine machinists. I just advised someone from the heavy duty diesel world. You know, they were like, hey, should we walk this show? And I'm like, you absolutely should. Yeah. Does it make sense for you to have a booth there? But you can go and do some of, like Rob and I talked about, you know, with us, with SEMA APEC, some of the business to business stuff. So if you're an engine builder, it doesn't matter if you're building Briggs and Strattons for, you know, junior dragsters, or you're building C15 X series Cummins, you know, you name it, go to this show. You know, Machinery Row, the tool suppliers, the, you know, the machine tool manufacturers, go to the show. It's, if you're in the engine industry, this is the show. And I don't get paid to say that, which just, you know, and neither do you. This is the acknowledgement of what that show is to our industry.
Agreed. Yep. No, and looking forward to seeing everybody there. So speaking of that, I mean, Jeff, safe travels. We'll, you know, we're going to see you just in less than a month. We'll see you at the show. Same thing, Chuck. I know you and I are going to rack up a few more frequent flyer miles, and you get to drive. So that's kind of a nice touch. But you know what? We're going to see everybody there. And yeah, looking forward to that show. Like I say, if you haven't got your tickets yet for that engine that's sitting behind Jeff, get your tickets now, because it's a really good chance to win. I mean, it's you're only selling 5,000 or 6,000 tickets, so it's, you know, there's a really good chance to win there for you. So looking forward to that.
Great cause.
For sure. Well, Chuck, Jeff, till next month, until we see you, looking forward to PRI, and you guys travel safe, and we'll see you next month. For those of you that are, you bet, thanks for your time.
Yep, absolutely. Not a problem.
And for those of you that are listening, keep in mind, you know, we do have an email on the Engine Professional Podcast. You can reach us at eppodcast@aera.org. If you have any questions or maybe a topic that you want to want us to share or to research for you, we'll do that. As well as any listeners, you can find us on any streaming platforms that carry podcasts. So it's the Engine Professional Podcast, as well as you can subscribe to the Engine Professional Podcast. So if you do that, it'll notify you and let you know of the next one that we got coming up. And again, guys, I really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next month.